Okay, good morning. Today, good. Okay, so Friday sponsorship for today's Daf Yomi Naftali Tilson of Talmud, Israel, Talmud. In honor of the yard site of his dear parents, the yard site of Rav Yonah ben Avram Leib, Ishtam v'yashar ohev Torah, Rivka bat Yaakov nifra b'keter Shem Tov. They went through Yisur and Karchem b'me'ashah, and their merit. Myself and our entire Daf Chevra should complete this off cycle in good health. Amen. Yeah. And of course, thank you to Rabbi Shifrin.
And you.
And all those who give the Daf. Okay. So we're holding on Daf Nun Tes. Does that sound correct? Yeah. Do you know how to divide your field into thirds or quarters and fifths? You got the Machlokes of Rav and Shmuel. I think that's the last thing we did. Right. And it is based on a situation of a field taken by the Sikarikon. And you need at some point to compensate the owner because it was sold at a reduction. So yes, you, the buyer, you can keep your field, but there's a percentage that must be given to the original owner. How much? A third, a quarter, Rav and Shmuel arguing. And comes Rav and he says, listen here, Shmuel, you know, you're arguing with me. I was actually there when we made this decree. So it's like very odd that you were arguing with me. And here we go on the top of Nun Tes, Amud Aleph. Does it sound right? Oh, you want to go before you didn't finish Nun Tes. So tell me where you're holding. The white lines? What was that? You're at Gidl. Did you do Gidl by Ra'ila?
Yeah.
You did Gidl by Ra'ila. Did you do the two dots? Okay. Okay. So the Zoom Mishnah Rishona, you see that where it's quoted from the Mishnah, the second wide line? You start there. Sounds there. Okay.
Yeah.
Based in Shalacharein Amru, a later based in says the following, Halokeach min ha-sikarikun. You purchase something from the sikarikun. And obviously, the owner was in a situation that he had no choice. And it stayed by the sikarikun for an extended period of time of 12 months. So what you do in such a situation is noten labalim, nosen labalim revi, you give him a quarter. And here's going to be the debate which I made reference to. What does it mean a quarter? What is it in the quarter here? So Rav says, Omar Rav Ravi'i Bekarko Ravi Bemos. In other words, it works as mentioned, that there was a reduction in price that took place, that when this Sikarikon, who got a field for free, lucky him, he just took it from the Jewish fellow. So when this Sikarikon turned around and sells it, he's going to sell it at a discount. Seems to be that when you rip something up from someone else, if you're walking down in specific areas in Baltimore and someone offers you a watch, a Rolex, right? And they got it in a way that's not ideal. They stole it from someone. So they're going to reduce the price. How much? Revi. What does a revi mean? What does it mean? A quarter, right? So comes Rav and he says, revi bekarko, revi bemos. So Rav tells us that you go ahead and you look at the field, correct? And it's a quarter of the field or the amount of money that corresponds to a quarter of the field. Shmuel Omar, Shmuel says, no. Revi'i bekarkosh and shlish bemos. In other words, you look at a quarter, but after that amount. In other words, are we dealing here with 25% or 33%? Now, 33% can actually be viewed, a third can be viewed as a quarter. Because after it is handed over, the third, the additional third, is in essence a quarter of the complete amount. So what's the root of this dispute between Rav and Shmuel? Mar Sovar, one master holds, Nechi Revi Zavin, that it's a reduction of a quarter of a price. And Umar Sovar, Nechi Chumshav, Rav on the other hand holds that it is a really, in essence, a fifth that is taking place, and therefore the quarter corresponds to it. Meisvei, now, the question is going to be from a price that seems to indicate quite clearly one way over the other. Zo Mishnah Rishona, what we mentioned earlier was the first way of analyzing this law. Based in Shel Achareyen Omru, the later court said, Halokeach min hasikarikun, if someone purchased from some sikarikun, nosen leba'alim revi'i, a quarter, v'yad ba'alim ala eliona. In other words, the filing has the right to go ahead and decide if he wants to give it money, if he wants to give it the land. Rotsu b'karka notlin, rotsu b'mos notlin. Now, Amosai, when is this law true? Bisman she'en biyodon likav. That is only when the original owner does not have the full amount, the financial ability to purchase back the whole field. Abal yesh biyodon likav. If they have the ability to go ahead and purchase back the whole field, hen kodni milchol odom. They're first. And then eventually, Rebbe Hoshi based in Rebbe establishes a court. Venimnu, when they decided the following, that if it remained 12 months and the original owner did nothing and it sat by the Sikarakun for 12 months, call Hakodem Likach Zacha, that we no longer have to turn to the original owner. The right is given to all to purchase that field. But as mentioned earlier, due to the fact that there was a reduction by the Sikarikun, aval nosen labalim revi'i bekarko revi'i bemos. So it says clearly that it's revi'i bemos, like what Rav says, not like Shmuel. So how will Shmuel defend this? Om Rav Hashi kitanya ahi. When Shmuel will tell you that that statement was said, la'achar shebo mos liyoto, that after you receive the money, in other words, if let's say it was a field that was worth $100, so there's a reduction that takes place that he was sold it for 66.6. So when you go ahead and hand him hand the original owner the $33.3, the third, the additional third after the 100 turns into a quarter. Because if you look at $133.3, $33 of that amount is actually a quarter. That's the dispute between Rav and Shmuel, okay? So the best way is to take a big chart here and look at a field and slice it into five, into four, and realize if it's a third or a fifth. But that's the dispute. But this gives us the ability to enter into today's daf. Comes Rav, Omar Rav. Oh no, I myself, havoi b'minyono. In other words, when there was a later decision, the Mishnah tells us that Rebbe eventually, and this is in the last part of the Mishnah, and probably this is recorded after the core statement of the Mishnah was shared. The Mishnah shares with us that Rebbe decided at some point to vote for this idea that they are going to wait the 12 months. And if the original owner does not go ahead and redeem it, so then everyone has the right, but they have to go ahead and give the additional third or quarter. So Rav says, I myself was there, b'minyono de Bei Rebbe. Now, as we know, Rav was a very unique Amora, because even though he's considered the next generation, but he, in some ways, we find often that he's considered Tana Upolig. Rav was considered also a Tana. So he was a member of the generation. He's never quoted, obviously, in the Mishnah, but he has more of a right. And here he shares that since I was present there, most probably my opinion should be taken into consideration how to divide the quarter or the fifth or the third, because I was present. I was b'minyona de Bei Rebbe. And now he shares, uminoi didi, and from me, manu bereisha. In other words, when they opened this issue for debate, I was the first one to share the opinion. So now you say to yourself, wow, Rav must have been very young then. And they start the discussion by listening to the words of Rav. How do we understand that? So Rashi makes it very clear. It works as follows. That's not a compliment, because on most issues, we start, in many issues, as we'll see actually, on many issues, we start a debate from the least experienced of all. And it's going to be based on the following. Now, the truth is, this is a statement that appears in the Mishnah, that in Dinei Nefashos, so if it's a capital case, we're going to go ahead and not allow the greatest authority of the court to share his opinion, because what would you think would happen, right? If the Gadol Hadar comes in and he shares his opinion, everyone else would be silent, right? If you remember a few days ago, we had in the Daf Yomi that there was a fellow by the name of Zachariah ben Avkolos, right? Remember him? You better remember him, because in a few weeks you're not going to be eating breakfast because of him. Because the Talmud tells us that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. What happened with this Zachariah ben Avkolos? He shares his opinion that, listen, you know, with the korban that came, Bar Kamsa, that he says, we can't offer it. We can't go ahead and accept it. We're going to have problems in the future. They're going to say that you bring Baalei Mum in. They're going to say that you kill someone that caused the Mum. So some claim, this is a more of a vort, that he actually was the greatest authority there. But he was very humble. He thought that he's the least experienced. And therefore, he shared his opinion. Once he shared his opinion, no one else would. And therefore, the Talmud uses the language of anvana so, in other words, the humility. So perhaps it's an insult, but the idea is that if it's a capital case, you do not want the greatest expert to be the first one to share an opinion. And it's actually linked to a verse. There's a very fascinating verse that when you go through the Rashi, this is in Shmos Chav Gimel Beis. The Torah tells us, what acharei rabim lahatos, lo selech acharei rabim lahatos, right, lo sane al-ra, al-riv. It's a verse that we're going to analyze soon, but the basic idea is that when it comes to dinei nefashos, a capital case, you do not want a situation of people having to argue with the greatest authority, and therefore the first opinion to be shared is of the youngest, right? So therefore, it seems to be that that applies only to dinei nefashos, but what Rav is telling us that actually in this on the issue of, on this monetary debate here, I was the first one to share the opinion. And that's going to be a little bit difficult because the Ha'anantznan, we have a tradition that only Dine Mamanos on monetary issues, or when it comes to monetary issues, the Hataros, the Tumah, or on issues that relate to Tumah and Tara, Maschilin Min Hagadol. There, you need to honor the head of the court. It's appropriate to go ahead and honor the greatest scholar. So therefore, on monetary issues, on issues that are Tumah and Tara, there you start Min Hagodo, correct? It is only Dinei Nefashos that we want to go ahead and be sure that we don't argue with the Rav, with the greatest authority, where Matchilin Min Hatzad, and therefore you start from the side. Remember, they're sitting in a semicircle. The greatest scholars are in the middle. So therefore, who's on the side? The newcomers, the younger ones. So therefore, the question is, by Rav claiming I was first to share an opinion, but wait a second, this wasn't a capital case, this was a monetary issue. So they should have started Min Hagoro. So Amar Rabba Brei de Rava. So Rabba, the same of Rava, the son of Rava says, Ve'iteiman, others claim that it was somehow called Hillel Brei de Rav Valas, Hillel, the son of Ravalas. He says the following, that when it comes to the counts, or when it came to the votes in the Minyono de Bei Rebbe, when it came to the votes in the house of Rebbe, Kulehu Minyonohu, all votes were Minatzad HaVematchilin. Why? So perhaps Rashi says, listen, maybe he had a tradition that the verse Losane Al Rav, that you don't go ahead and argue with the greatest authority, perhaps he applied it even to monetary. Others say that this was really humility. That Rebbe, in other words, why is it that on a monetary issue, we want to hear first the opinion of the greatest scholar because he's the Rosh Hashiva. He's the, you know, he is that based and you want to go ahead and honor him. In the household of Rebbe, it was all about humility. Or what the Talmud is going to tell us very soon is that the stature and the greatness of Rebbe was such that it was like from a different generation. In other words, it was so unique there that if Rebbe would share his opinion, even on a monetary issue or on an issue that relates to purity and impurity, no one would dare say anything else. And therefore, being sensitive to that in the household or in the court of Rebbe, they always started Min Hatzad. And that's going to be the next discussion of what the Talmud calls Torah Ugdula B'makom Echad, that Rebbe was so great that there was knowledge of Torah, but there was an authority and there was respect. He was the leader of the generation that he reached such a level in his base, and you have to be sure that others, the ones who are not the greatest scholars, are the ones that share the opinion. And that's what the Gemara is going to tell us now. But Amar Rava Brei de Rava, so here we go, another tradition that some attribute to Rabba, the son of Rabba. Ve'i Tema Rabbi Hillel Brei de Ravalos. Others say that it's really the son of Ravalos. That you should know. Miyamos Moshe Ve'ad Rebbe. From the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Until the days of Rebbe, Lo matzino, we have not found Torah ugdula b'makom echad, that you have greatness of Torah and greatness of leadership in one place, the same individual. It was not to be found from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe. Now, what exactly is Torah? We all know what Torah scholarship we are all familiar with. But what is gedula? So Rashi throws in that it's osher, it's wealth. Now, it doesn't have to be wealth. And most probably what Rashi is saying is that often, who do people respect? People that have, you know, that they don't have to rely on others, that they could share an opinion and not worry that their salary is going to be cut back. So the gedula could be or often is osher, but it's not a must, as we'll see soon. But the bottom line is, what the Gemara is telling us here is you should know that there was no one that reached that Rebbe, the respect and the idea that he was the authority, not just in Torah, but in leadership. No one reached that pinnacle like Rebbe since Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, that explains why in his court there was a sensitivity. You do not want to hear Rebbe's opinion, because then everyone else might just follow and we won't achieve the truth, which is always our goal. And now the Gemara is going to go through a series of Jewish history where you find great people, and the Gemara wonders, why do you not attribute this awesomeness of Torah Ugdula to others? And that's what it's going to be asked right now. Velo, wait a second, you're telling me that there was no one, no leader that reached Torah Ugdula? V'havi Yeshua. What about Yeshua bin Nun, right? Brothers and Terence is strong, obviously a very strong leader. The Gemara tells us there was another person. What we're saying now is that during their lifetime, there was no one else that was even close, right? So it was like a Gadol Hador, that there was an understanding that there's no one even close. There was no one that was respected, did not have the Torah and the Gdula. So therefore, since Have Elazar, since there was Elazar at that time, so therefore, you're not going to go ahead. You cannot attribute this idea of Torah Ugdula to Yehoshua because he had Elazar. Okay, so once Yehoshua passed away, Elazar was around. He was the leader. He had Torah. He had Gdula. He was the leader. He was the authority. So why don't you attribute this incredible title to Elazar? The Gemara answers, Have Pinchas. It was Pinchas. It seems to be, although he was a son, and you would think that a son would not be like the father, but the fact is that Pinchas, when as Elazar was that leader, everyone knew that if Elazar wasn't on vacation or something, you could always turn to Pinchas, because Pinchas is not too much less, and therefore you cannot give that title of Torah Ugdula to Elazar. Ask the Gemara, wait a second. Okay, so when Elazar dies, Pinchas is around, he's in charge, you have Torah Ugdula v'have Pinchas. The answer is have Iskenim. There were elders. There was a Boaz, for example, right? There was the people that were considered the elders. These elders, again, were extremely well respected. So yes, Pinchas was the leader, but it was not a leadership where you had the Torah Ugdula. Okay? So now the Gemara asked, have, listen to the next one where the Gemara wonders why we did not give him this title of Torah Ugdula, Shol. Now, King Shaul, clearly he was a gedula, he was the king. What do we know about his Torah scholarship? So the Gemara shares with us in Yuma that he was a tremendous Torah scholar, right? B'chol asher yifne yarshia, in other words, he was indeed a very strong teacher of Torah, but there was a problem with Shaul. What was the problem with Shaul? The Gemara tells us that yes, he was a tremendous Torah scholar, but he did not focus on teaching others. So yes, he was very, very knowledgeable, very, very successful. But even the term used to show his strength and knowledge in Torah, Yarshia, is linked to the word Resha, because he did not focus. A Torah scholar is a great Torah scholar, but he has an understanding that he has a responsibility of being sure that others learn and the next generation learns. So therefore, Shaul was, in the Talmud is a little bit critical, especially because David HaMelech, on the other hand, was focused on the education. But the bottom line is, you have Shaul, who was the king. He had the gedula, and he was also a Torah scholar. Abishol. The answer is that there were others at that time, and therefore you cannot give him the title. Abishol. Shmuel was the prophet Shmuel. The Gemara says, wait a second, but Shmuel dies. So after the passing of Shmuel, Shaul is still active. He's still the Torah authority. he still reaches that level of Gdula. So if so, why not give him the title? The answer is Kule Shone Ka Amrina. What we're talking about here is throughout the life. In other words, once Moshe Rabbeinu becomes Moshe Rabbeinu throughout his life, he is Mr. Torah Gdula. Once Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi reaches that level of leadership throughout his life, there's no one that challenges him, not in Torah, not in Gdula. On the other hand, Shaul, yes, there were periods of time, perhaps you could give him that title, but throughout his life, you cannot. Kule Shani Kamrina. Next, Vahave David. What about David HaMelech? David HaMelech, right? Torah, of course, there was Torah there, right? Marim Brochas tells us that he was extremely always involved with the needs of others and teaching Torah. And so too, he was the Gdula, he was the king, Havid David. So Gemara is going to tell us that there was another person that reached, was perhaps David's Rebbe, and therefore he does not get the title. Who was this person? Someone that's less known. Ira HaYeiri. Ira HaYeiri. So he's mentioned in Tanakh that he was a Kohen Le David. He served as a Kohen to David, which could mean that he was actually the Kohen that David gave his gifts to. Gemara was a little bit, sees it as a little bit of a problem that he gave all his gifts only to this Ira. But whatever it is, Ira was a tremendous scholar. And therefore, since Ira HaYeiri was a scholar and lived as David was active, you're not going to give David HaMelech the title of Torah Ugdula. Who is this Ira HaYeiri? So if you open Tanakh, he's called a Kohen. It doesn't happen. Chazal had a tradition, you know, that he was an actual Kohen. Others said perhaps he was a person who served. If you look at his name, Ya'iri, what tribe do you think it sounds like he's from? Ya'ir ben Menashe. So perhaps he's a descendant of the family of Menashe. Some actually link him to where he came from. There was a place called Tekoa, where they produced oil. And if you have oil, what do you have? Or Ya'iri. So that's Ira Ya'iri. And so Gemara is going to tell us that Ya'ira Ya'iri takes away our ability of giving this awesome title to David HaMelech. Vanach Navshei, but Nebach, you know, he died. And so afterwards, David HaMelech has that authority. The Gemara says, as mentioned earlier, Kula Shani Be'in, and you have to have that throughout his life that the title applies. Frank asked Gemara, have a Shlomo. What about Shlomo HaMelech? Answers, have a Shimi Ben Gera. So Gemara says, wait a second, but he was not active throughout Shlomo's period of time. Afterwards, he dies, and you know how he dies. Shlomo takes care of him, right? Following guidance from his father, knew how to, you know, be a strong leader. He had no choice. He killed him. So the answer is Kule Shone Ka'amrina. What we're saying here is that we need to identify, to give that title has to be someone that throughout the person's time of leadership, he has the Torah of Dula. So Gemara asks me, is going to have a Chizkiah. What about Chizkiah? Have a Shavna. Ha Iktel. Shavna also got killed by Sancherib. Kula Shani Kamrin, and same answer. Ask the Gemara, okay, let's fast forward. Second temple period. Vahave Ezra. What about Ezra? Ezra returns, you know, Ruya Haisa Torah Linasin. In other words, he was a person that reached a level that gave us Torah like Moshe Rabbein. So if so, why does he not get that title? The answer is there was Nechemya ben Chachmiah. There was Nechemya. Now, after the Gemara shares this tradition, later on, they want to share that there's someone else that reached the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, someone else that reached the Torah and Gdula of Rebbe. And who was that? Omer Ravach Abrei Derava. Afani Omer. You know who I can add to the list? Mimos Rebbe Vaad Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi is the one that edits the Talmud. So if Moshe Rabbeinu is the one that gave us Torah, and Rebbe gave us the Mishnah, and obviously we celebrate the Talmud, so Rav Ashi is the one that gets credit for that. So therefore, Rav Ashi reaches that level of Lometzinu Torah Gdil B'Mokamecha. So the Gemara is going to ask, and according to many, what the Gemara is really asking is that, wait a second, you're telling me that there was no one like Rav Ashi? There was someone called Huna Bar Nosson. Huna Bar Nosson was respected even by the Babylonian and Persian kings, we are told. So what about him? In other words, up until now, you told me that there was someone else that was also great. You're not going to give that title. So Huna Bar Nosson should be the one to take the title away from Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says, Shani Huna Barnasan, the Michav Havekai Fliller of Ashi. He always understood that what's appropriate for him is to be accepting of whatever Rav Ashi teaches us. Now, let's continue to Mishar Cheresh. If you have a person that mutes and he communicates, there are two ways for him to communicate. One would be with a remez. Remez is using motions by hand that indicates that he wants something, he wants a sale done, he wants some kind of transaction. Then nirmas, and so too, if they make a motion to him and he responds to the motion, that perhaps works. We'll see soon what. Uben b'seira omer kofetz v'nikvas. Even if he does not do a full remiza, but only make some kind of lip movement, that would be enough for him to indicate that it's time for a transaction. B'metaltelin, but what the Mishnah says is that this works with some kind of movable objects that need to be sold. He needs to survive. He needs to sell things. Even though that he has capacities that are limited, you cannot go ahead and take away from him the full ability of making financial transactions. So therefore, you're going to allow it b'metaltelin. The Gemara soon is going to ask, what about a get? In other words, what about if he got married? He married someone, and it was a marriage that was obviously done not by expression. He cannot express himself, but he gave some kind of remez. What if he wants to go ahead and nullify or divorce himself from that marriage with the remez? That's going to be in the Gemara. Hapeutos, now we move on to minors. Minors, do you have to have, give them the ability to make financial transactions? Otherwise, they're not going to survive. Mikhon mekach umem koron mekar b'metaltelin. Don't let them sell land. But when it comes to movable objects, you do allow them. Omer Rav Nachman Machlokas v'metaltelin. Rav Nachman says, listen, yet earlier in the Mishnah Machlokas of Tanakam and Bemsera, if it's requirement to have a full remez, or if it's enough to make some kind of lip movement for the deaf mute, so Omer Rav Nachman Machlokas v'metaltelin, this dispute only relates to movable objects. Aval Begitin, when it comes to divorce, Divrei Hakol Beramiza, everyone agrees that you need the more significant remez. It's not enough to go ahead and for this cheresh to release his wife with a kvitza. That would not work. The lip movement would not be enough. Now, the Gemara asks, well, why do you even have to say that? Pshita, metaltelin tzan. The Mishnah says straight out, metaltelin. Why would you think otherwise? The Gemara says, no, maude tema. You would have thought, after metaltelin, perhaps we're being told that even when it comes to movable objects, meaning, when it comes to marriage, we would say it's given that he could go ahead and release his wife because the way he entered into the marriage was with a kvitza. So why would a kvitza not work? So therefore, the Mishnah tells us, no, kamash malon, that it's not the case, that it's only metaltelin. Now, the second reading here is, ikod amri amar Rav Nachman, kamachlok is metaltelin, kamachlok is begitin, that the same dispute that the Seir believes that even a kvitza would be enough applies not just to movable objects, even with gittin. The Gemara asks, wait a second. The Mishnah mentions metaltelin. Ema af b'metaltelin. Both would be the same. Now, let's move on to the minors. Now, the question is, how young could they be, right? The three-year-old comes with a pack of diapers and wants to sell it to you, right? Can you go ahead and purchase it from him based on the Mishnah about kama? Machmer Rav Yudah Rav Yitzchak Reis Rav Nach. Rav Yudah says to Rav Yitzchak, Kibarshis Kibarshev, a 6 or 7 year old. Rav Kahana Amar Kibarshev Kibartini, 7 or 8 year old. Masnisim Tana Kibartesh Kibar, is there a 9 or 10 year old? The low plague, don't think that this is a major machlokas that they sat analyzing all young children. Kol chad b'chad efi korbe. What we're being told here is that you have to analyze case by case. There are some kids that are mature, that if lo aleinu, you have kids, you know, that they don't have parents and they have to make a transaction for them to survive. If it's a kid that's a 7 year old that understands what's happening, you can go ahead and make such a transaction. And the rabbis considered it valid mipnei tikuna olam, which is the theme that you need them to survive. Other kids you have to wait till a little bit more mature. Today, you know, they say the 20 is the new 10 year old, so maybe every generation these issues. V'taima mai, why is it that the rabbis allowed it? Amar Rav Abba Bar Yaakov Rav Yochanan Mishum Kedei Chayav. It was established for the rabbis for them to survive. Kidei Chayo, very sensitive. Now, here we go. We mentioned something in the name of Rav Abba Bar Acha, of Rav Abba Bar Yaakov, in the name of Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara loves stacking those things, which is an incredible way of remembering things. And it's going to be analyzing a verse that relates to King Yehu. So what happens was is the following. There's an evil king by the name of Achav. He's wiped out. He's a king of Israel. He is wiped out because of the fact that he worshipped Avodah Zarah. A new king comes to power by the name of Yehu. Earlier in his career, he is fighting Avodah Zarah, and he comes up with this incredible idea that he's going to gather all worshippers of a specific Avodah Zarah in one place. And what he's going to go ahead, and he's going to be sure that they're committed to that Avodah Zarah by wearing the garments of that Avodah Zarah, and then he's going to wipe them out. Okay. So the verse says that he told the one in charge of, you know, the garments. We'll see what kind of garments we're talking about. Give the special garments worn by the worshippers of the Baal. Now, the word miltecha needs clarification. My miltecha. These are garments that are made by making motions with the finger and by stretching them. So now we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about flax garments, which were extremely popular during that period of time. Hot summer in the Middle East, you like a thin garment, and it appears to be that a good linen garment is thin. It was popular, if you remember the story at the end of Parshas Balak with the failure of the Jewish men with the women. The pagan women, which brought about destruction. The Gemara Sanhedrin tells us that they were out in the marketplace looking for linen garments. So linen garments were always popular. There was a market for it. The mission tells us that they would bring it all the way from India. So here we have, and we're going to, obviously we mentioned that these unique pagan garments were linen garments. That's not to say that anyone who wears a linen garment is pagan, but it happens to be in that case. And here we're going to talk a little bit about this uniqueness of the linen garments. He says in the name of Rav Yochanan, as he comes to Babylonia, and he shares the following story. Shigerle Bonim ben Nunim, a fellow by the name of Bonim ben Nunim, a wealthy fellow, le Rebbe. You know what he sent Rebbe? Special garments. Four types of different linen garments. Sivni, Chome, Salsal, Malmelo, the authorities don't know exactly how they relate to the specifics of the different linen garments, but they were sent to Rebbe. Now, what's unique about them was that when you would fold them, they would become very, very small. They were so thin that you could go ahead and fold them into something tiny. You could go ahead and roll it up, and it's going to be the son of the size of a goza, a walnut. Upalge and a half, dem goza, and a half a walnut. And salslo memalmelo, kepiska to upalgi de pistika. It would become the size of either a gallnut or some kind of pistachio, whatever it was. You would roll it up, and it would have in it the volume of a small nut and a half, just to tell you how thin it was and how unique it was. Okay, so here we go now. And if you wonder what exactly is malmelo, because that's the description of garment number four, my malmelo, davar animlal, the nimtach, it is a garment that is made by finger motions and buying stretch. Now comes the question. A child makes a transaction. That's what we were talking about. There was a mistake made. In Bava Metzia, there are details about mistakes in transactions, right? In what case is it just ignored? In what case do you have to cancel the whole transaction? In what case does he have to return the amount of the mistake? So usually we talk about what's known as a shtus, a sixth. But the question is, does that apply to a child? V'ta'usonat kama. What if a mistake was made? It follows the same guidelines as an adult made by a transaction. Now, Abaye wonders, wait a second, you're giving a green light for a minor to make a financial transaction for them to survive. That relates to a sale. What about if it's a gift? Matan tofsam, what about a matana mai? Rav Yemar Omar Ein Matanosa Matana. This is a transaction that we allow him to walk away with cash for survival, not to go ahead and start giving gifts away. You'll have a lot of friends on it. Mar Ravashi Omar Matanto Matano. It could be a gift. Now, it works as follows. What's going to happen now is that this was a question that they struggled with in the Beis Medrash. And the son, Mar, the son of Rav Ashi, believed that a gift was a gift. Now, if the son of Rav Ashi has an opinion and you share that in a Beis Medrash, what's going to happen? Everyone's going to most probably follow it. So what happened was is that when they sent this question and they attributed it to two authorities, afchua, they flipped. In other words, they attributed the opinion of Mar to Rav Yemar and the opinion of Rav Yemar to Mar, the son of Rav Ashi. V'shadru l'kamei to Rabbi Mordechai. Rabbi Mordechai, the great Talmud of Rav Ashi, was sent this information. But it seems to me that they flipped. It either was a mistake or most probably they flipped it intentionally to go ahead and find out if Rav Mordechai, if they're going to go ahead and say that the son of Rav Ashi believed that a gift can be given, obviously Rav Mordechai is not going to disagree with it. So therefore, they flipped the two opinions and they send it to Rav Mordechai. Amar le, Rav Mordechai responds, Zilu Amar le bar mar, go tell the son of our master that his opinion is wrong. In other words, his opinion was really right because he was told the opposite. Because I can tell you exactly where we were standing when this opinion was shared to us by your great father Rav Ashi. Lav hachi avuvda, was not the story like this. Ki avikai mar, when the great master Rav Ashi chad kroa ora, bechad kroa darka, he had one foot on the floor, one on the ladder. Maybe he was in the Beis Medrash and there was an upper floor and there were a lot of kids in the Beis Medrash at that time, and he decided to go up to the attic to learn in a quiet place perhaps. So therefore, I remember your father was standing with one foot on the ladder, one on the floor. Vamrina Lim, we're talking about issues that relate to children. Matonosomai, what about a gift? The Omar Lan Matonosomatoni, your father said straight out that a gift is a gift. Achas matana shcher of law lenu, if it's a gift that's given by a person that's going to die. Vachas matana bari, in other words, he has the full right to give a gift like anyone else, because most probably sometimes a child understands that if I give a gift to this important person, eventually I'm going to be able to do business with him. Eventually he's going to give me something. Achas matana maruba, achas matana muetis, even if it's a significant gift, he understands we give the right to the child to make such a transaction. That indeed is part of Tikkun HaOlam. Now, we continue in the Mishnah. Eilu dvarim amru mipnei darchei shalom. There are things, shalom is extremely important for Klal Yisrael, right? It's our survival, it's our essence. And therefore, Chachamim sense that we take sometimes our religion very, very seriously and we're willing to punch someone in the face to go ahead and be very, very religious. So therefore, for the sake of shalom, they made these takonos, and Klal Yisrael has been saved by this Mishnah many, many times. So the question is, who are you going to honor first to read the Torah, right? The most important person, please go up and read the Torah, right? The whole crowd's going to go. So therefore they establish Kohen Torah Rishon, Vacharav Levi, Vacharav Yisrael, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. So every time you're at a Kriyas HaTorah and they call up a Kohen, you could say, Baruch Hashem, we have something called Chachmei Yisrael that realized that we need some assistance to achieve Shalom. Next, number two on the list, which is not as well known as number one, Ma'arvim Bebayis Yashon. So let's say you want to go ahead and put up an Erev or enclose the courtyard. The first thing that's needed is obviously the physical walls or boundaries, but you have to also combine all members of the community, and how you get Jews to be combined together, obviously with food. So all members of the community have ownership of a little bit of bread or a matzah, and it's put in someone's house, and then that house is considered like the hub for everyone. Now, if you're going to go ahead and start moving it from house to house, imagine what rumors are going to be spreading. Do you know why they moved it from the house of so-and-so? Because he was stealing the matzah, right? There could be a lot of problems if you start moving the era from house to house. Could be that explains why nowadays, you know where the matzos of the community era, it's in a shul, actually. Maybe because there was too much, who knows what the history is regarding that. There's a debate. But bottom line is that if you have a house that once upon a time had the Erev, keep it there. Ma'arvim bebayis yashon, mipnei darchei shalom, for the sake of peace. Okay, that's what we're being told here by the Mishnah. So we have two things so far, the Aliyas and the Mishnah. And the next one is Bor Shuhu Korov La'amo. You have a stream. You have fields, okay? And people have a cistern, they have some kind of pit that they want to fill with water. Who do you give the legal right to fill it first? The one that's on the upper part, closer to the source of the spring, or people are on the lower part? So, Bor Shu Korov La'amo Mismal Rishon, you allow the person who is closest to the source. If they are to Shon, the Gemara is going to analyze what kind of pit. Is it someone that fills up automatically? Is it one that you need to go ahead and divert the water? There's going to be a discussion which we'll see more tomorrow, okay? And the next one is Mitsudas Chaya Va'ofos V'Dogim. If I put up a trap, even if the trap does not have a base, no receptacle, if I just put up a trap and animals get caught in my trap, technically it's not in my domain. So how exactly do I acquire it? So even though I put up a trap, you could go and take the bird, the fish. Answer is, don't take from it. Yesh Behen Mishum Gezel Mipnei Darke Shalom. So opinion number one is that it's Darke Shalom for you not to take things that I caught in my fish trap that I put in the lake. But the language of the Mishnah is that it's only a Darke Shalom, meaning if he goes ahead, if a person is not nice and takes it, I cannot take him to court. And therefore, we have opinion number two, that Rav Yossi Omer, it's Gezel Gomer. Rav Yossi says, no. Yes, it's rabbinic, but if someone takes fish that you put in that trap, you can take them to court because we label it, the rabbis gave it full-fledged, made it completely of the owner of the trap. Next on the list of things that were established for Darkei Shalom, Mitzias Cheresh Shote Vekotam. We're talking about people that do not have full mental capacity. If they find something, technically it's not really theirs, but the rabbis say, you know what? It belongs to them. And if you steal it from them, Yeshven Mishum Gezel Mipnei Darkei Shalom. And again, it appears that if you're just simply not a nice person and takes it, the courts can do nothing. Opinion number two is Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gomor. He too, in this case, he also believes that it's going to be considered a Gezel Gomor. Okay. Let's continue here. So you have a poor person shaking the top of an olive tree, and olives are falling down. Technically, it did not come into his vessels, but nevertheless, you don't take those olives. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gomor. Rabbi Yossi says it's complete Gezel. We, as a community, need to take care of people in our community. That's our responsibility, and it's not that in any way, shape, or form we look down at humanity, but that's what communities do. They take care of their own. But if, let's say, you have people who are not members of our community who go ahead and need to take from our resources, we allow it. Mipnei Darkei Shalom, as we'll see in the Gemara, that includes Bikur Cholim for us, Mesim. There are many things we do for the sake of humanity, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. So now, we mentioned the Mishnah, Kohen Levi Yisrael, Minan Emili. Let's find the source for it. Our Amar of Master Ram says, the verse says the following. When he gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, and we all know that Kohanim are children of Levi, but the Torah decides to mention that they are Bnei Levi. Do we not all know that Kohanim are descendants of Levi? Why is it mentioned? What we're being taught here is Kohen goes first, Bahadur Levi. Fine. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka Amar Ma'acha, this is the first. The verse talks about actually the Egla Arufa, Vinikshra Kohanim Bnei Levi. Again, Kohanim, children of Levi, why mention it? This is how you honor, this is the structure of things. A Kohen and then a Levi. Because Ato Analoy Adina, do we not know that Kohanim Bnei Levi Ninu? Ela Kohen Bereisha Bahadur Levi. Okay. Ravashi Omar Ma'acha, Ravashi says this is the verse. And this is a verse that appears in Divrei Yomim, Bnei Amram Aharon Umoshe. They are a member of a tribe. But what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Vayavdel Aharon lahakdisha kodesh kadashim. That Aharon HaKohen was given a standard that was greater than the Levim. Kohen Levi Bingo. Rav Chiya Bar Abba Omar Ma'acha vekidashto. This is an obligation that we have to sanctify a Kohen, to respect the Kohen, the whole Dover Shabbat Kedusha, on any matters that relate to holiness, we give honor to a Kohen. And Tana Debir Rabbi Shmuel Tana Dekita Shol Chol Dover Shabbat Kedusha, when it comes to any matter of holiness, Niftah, Rishon, Levarach, Rishon, Velito, Mone, Yofa, Rishon, anything that relates to a mitzvah, to a bracha, give it to a Kohen. Now, the Gemara asks, wait a second, if you looked at our Mishnah, the Mishnah tells us, why do you honor a Kohen? Darche Shalom, for peace. But now we went through a whole series of psukim. It's Torah. He says, you know what, yeah, you're right, Daraisa. But to analyze why such a system was given was Mipnei Darkei Shalom. But the truth is, the Gemara asks, the essence of Torah, this is not something that applies specifically to this. The whole essence of Torah is, you want to know what a true Torah Jew is? One that brings shalom, because that's the essence and that's the path of Torah. And if so, this is quite problematic to label specifically the structure of Kohen Levi Yisrael as something that's Darkei Shalom. If we have verses, it's Daraisa. If it's Daraisa, all of Torah is Darkei Shalom. Ela Omer Abaye. Abaye says that it is needed for a very specific situation. We have scenarios where the Kohen perhaps is given the right to honor someone else. But when it comes to the shul, when it comes to an aliyah, when I call up a Kohen, the Gabbai calls up a Kohen, the Kohen cannot say, you know what, my Yisrael, I want to honor him. It doesn't work. In what situations is he given the right to honor someone else? So it works as following. It works as follows. Ela Omar Abaye L'Kedemar, the master taught in the Brice of Tanya. You have two people that bought a big bowl of hummus. They each one have their own pita. Okay, so no forks and knives. Each one dips their pita into the bowl of hummus. Imagine if one of them has to go ahead and use the facility. The other fellow is going to finish all the hummus. So what's the appropriate thing to do? Mamtinin ze lo ze bekara. You wait. Now, if there's three of them, right, and one of them goes, you're not going to make the whole kehillah away because you have to go ahead and get the same share amount of hummus. And so too, habonseh uposhet yado tchila. The person who broke bread, he is the one that gets the first right into the dish with it as the food. Now, in that scenario, there he has the right. If you were given the right to be first the dish in, right, and there's someone there that you want to honor, the vakasha, that's acceptable. Now, when is it okay to honor someone? And that is only besudo marmar. Alei lo shanalo besudo. That one comes to a meal. When it comes to hummus, we're not going to make a big fight if someone gets hummus because he is honored as a great person. Don't do it in shul. Why? Because if the kohen's going to decide to start honoring someone that's great, and we all think we're great, we are in trouble. Lo, the asulim, so it's going to cause a fight. Okay. Omer amasna, had the omer besakneses lo, that which you say that in a shul not. Lo, omron, when is that true? The Shabbos and the Yom Tovim, it's only Shabbos and Yom, the Shlich Rabbim, there are many. Aval b'sheni b'chamishi lo, when it comes to Monday and Thursday, where there are less people in shul, we'll see soon how that applies. Nowadays, that's where we're going to leave things. Monday and Thursday, there's some level of flexibility to take the aliyah that's designated for the Kohen and give it to someone else because the fact is there are not so many people.
No.
No. Okay. We'll do that at part of davening. Okay. Okay.